your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We've got a lot of going on this week, a lot of activities and all kinds of hijinks. We had the Chris Christie debacle up there, the closing of that two lanes to the George Washington Bridge in New Jersey. And that was just quite a flap, wasn't it? Our second hour, we're going to start off with Greg Palace. He's going to bring us up to date and give us a little background on Chris Christie and some of those organizations that floated over $6 million worth of ads back as part of this great, hurricane that swept through New Jersey. Ads, of course, you know, what we need. That money could have gone directly to the people to benefit them more. But also, we're going to speak about the World Economic Forum. This occurs every year in Davos, Switzerland. This year is taking place between the 22nd of January and the 25th of January. And the meeting has been held for quite a few years now. Klaus Schwab founded it, and he continues to be the founder of the and host, the primary host of the forum that's held in Davos. This year, you can go into that site, and I suggest that you do. It's www.3.weforum.org. www.weforum.org, and you'll find some of those. You don't have to put the 3 in there. Just put www.weforum.org. The 3 has to do with one of the PDFs that was being called up. Anyway, they set out there, and they have quite a few publications, and they're setting out the global risk 1 through 10 for this coming year, 2014. And let me tick those off and then just add some commentary here from The Secret Truth. And we'll go through as far as we can with these, and then we'll go back to some current news and then bring Greg Palast on the beginning of the second hour. These are 10 different global risks as set out by the World Economic Forum meeting in Davos, Switzerland this coming weekend. Anyway, number 1, physical crises in key economies. Well, what has happened back in 2008 and so forth, we had a financial crisis, not really an economic crisis, because of derivatives that had been run up by these banks. And they became gambling casinos instead of banks. And they started exercising very, very wild and gambling type of tendencies, and they're speculating in the derivatives market. What happened as a result of that speculation and over-speculation is that they ran up severe losses, and they were using different kinds of accounting methods to continue to value these derivatives in certain ways, and so and actually to mislead themselves and the stockholders and so forth. But the physical crises, they broke out in the last year or so in the Arab countries. You can see that the Arab spring was farming and going on. You had Libya overthrown. Gaddafi was overthrown under Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. and Obama, President Obama, Barack Obama. We had also the Greek economic crisis, and they're deeply in debt now. And many of those southern Latin countries have experienced unrest and so forth, high rates of employment in Spain and so forth. And we don't see that it's getting any better. And also, one very important thing to consider here is that these central banks in most of these countries are privately owned. And for sure, the Federal Reserve System in this country is privately owned. They had to maintain control, the elitist of many of these, most of these countries had to maintain control over our Federal Reserve System to continue to fund their banks, because as a result their banks were becoming illiquid. And that's what Paulson, Henry Paulson, acting as Secretary of the Treasury, convened this special meeting of all these different representatives and senators, and he preached to them that if we don't do something and get this funding going, there's going to be a major economic crisis. Of course, this came on the tail of a mortgage crisis that culminated in, they said that there were bad loans put on the books. And so then they used that to foment this special loan package and so forth to continue to fund these banks. But the main funding of all of these banks, whether they were domestic or international, has come from the Fed. Now, when they take these credits and just put them on a set of books of another bank's books, especially these foreign corporations, they gave them tremendous credits into the billions. And actually the total is into the trillions of dollars now. When they do this, those credits are on those sets of banking books. Eventually, that money can be spent into the economies that they reside in, or they can be loaned into those economies. Whenever that happens, then you're talking about a tremendous infusion of spending or cash into the economy, and this is where we're going to see inflation come back for sure sooner or later, whenever the banks are free to start lending into the economy or to spend that money into the economy, and thus individuals will gain that money and spend it into the economy. The World Economic Forum meets, like I said, every winter, and they set out these different risks, but who they represent are the major players, movers and shakers in the world. It's the corporate leaders and financial people and the top people, political people from the major European and American countries. Now, they bring in Tokyo, they bring in some Latin Americans in Mexico now also, and they also bring in some sheiks and some of these Saudi Arabians, people like that, but it's based on money and corporate interest. And number two, let's go. The first risk they're saying is physical crises in key economies. Well, Egypt, we've seen that. We've seen Syria now is under attack for, setting up a civil war there with outside interests and so forth. Those are just some of the examples. Number two, we have structural high unemployment and underemployment. These countries, as these economies begin to weaken because of the physical mismanagement and the banking debacle, you could say, then there was not money available to lend to individuals, and the banks had to see about just floating over their operating, they were insolvent. So the banking structure itself overall here and in Europe and many of most of the internationals had to gain credits primarily from the Federal Reserve just to maintain their operations. And so this is what we've seen since 2008. They're putting forward this as some gigantic economic downturn to justify the credits that they've given to their own people. Okay, number three, water crises. The Suez group that used to own the Suez Canal is running out there and trying to make deals in South America and Bolivia and so forth. But they see a water crisis in the future, and water is getting to be expensive. Water, they said, like in the old West, was worth fighting for here in the United States. So water is a very key and very critical commodity that all of us need to continue to exist and live. Number four, severe income disparity. When you have the corporations that are rising like they have to the powerful hierarchy and the high that they have finally attained, you're going to see a tremendous disparity. The corporations are machines, or money machines, and they function to consolidate and make money in the easiest, most direct means possible at the lowest cost. This Obamacare is going to create even more problems in the corporate sector by the corporations laying off people or cutting them back to that 30-hour threshold to keep from paying for any medical insurance. The Obamacare is also, the worst part about the Obamacare is that it gives the federal government more and more power over the individual's lives, so that the people in the future under Obamacare will be more micromanaged in this country than they ever have before, and that's the most diabolical part of it. But the severe income disparity is continuing because you have such large financial and corporate interests now that are satisfying their own needs and so forth at the expense of labor, you could say. Number five, okay, failure of climate change mitigation and adaptation. Well, according to people that have written on the subject of say, environmentalism, Donald Gibson up in New York, University of New York, Syracuse, says that environmentalism is equivalent to a political control system. So it's a political system is the way that he's seen it and written about it. And that's what they've done from infancy to the primary grades, the elementary on up through the middle school and high schools. They have put into place a tremendous perceived need to protect the environment. Now, what that is basically is there were excesses, and there were like Love Canal, there were chemical plants and so forth that did spoil and pollute the environment. So the environmental movement initially did some good. The problem with the environmental movement, it has evolved into not only an environmental movement, but a political movement. So if you come up and start criticizing this climate, this warming, you know, type of theory, you know what I mean, global warming, and they have it set up to where their whole scenario and their whole worldview, the real elite out there, they want to sell carbon credits and things like this. They want to control the people through this fear-mongering of this global warming trend and so forth, and they've been teaching them this since the low grades, you know, elementary school and so forth. And so they're beginning to attack people that are questioning this global warming theory, which is not right at all. It's almost like a new religion, and some have portrayed it and described the environmental movement as a new religion. And you could say that it's like Gaia, it's earth worship. The Greek goddess Gaia was the goddess of earth, see? So you could say that many of these people, they'll go out and beat drums in the park and you know, holler about, and they love the environment, they love the earth. The earth is like a living thing and so forth. And they'll actually shun individuals and give priority to the earth itself, and this has been going on a long time. These kinds of dynamics in this country. So what they're maneuvering is that if anyone is critical of the global warming idea or concept or theory, then you're a nutcase and you're against good environmentalism. And so they're turning this into a political type of attack animal. See. Okay, let's go to number seven, a global governance failure. The World Economic Forum, along with the government, G20, G7, G8, when they add that in, and other international conclaves, you could say, throughout the decades, have been pushing for the when people say the New World Order, they're talking about a New World Order, and that the United Nations is one of the core, you know, organizations that's bringing about all of the nations under one roof in New York City, and then the corporate structure is actually bigger than any than most of the countries of the world. The giant corporations, their economics and their cash flows through their corporations are far exceed most countries in the world. So you're seeing at the very top of this thing, you're seeing a financial type of dominance. But with a recent downturn in the financial sector due to derivatives and so forth, and the inability to clear those off their books in a expedient way, you're seeing a continued crisis in the banking sector, which is spilling over into the economy. In this United States right now, we have a recovery. So it's being led somewhat by the building sector and the real estate sector. So that is good overall. To see that going on internally here. Worldwide, you still have problems, and China is having environmental problems to a great extent, and they're polluting far worse than this country ever experienced in places in this country. So the global governance failure is one of the risks, they said, that if we don't get that done, then we've got a great risk underway here. And number eight is food crisis, okay? A number of years ago, they started consolidating. Many of these grain companies started consolidating into Switzerland on their main corporate offices. So the food crisis, and what's been happening here is the GMOs have come on strong. So they're genetically modifying these organisms, these food, and then they're coming up with all kinds of different foods, and corn right now is 80% GMO, many people have stated, and many of the other foods are moving towards a greater and greater percentage. And so the food crisis, the population growth, the expansion of population, some countries are not growing in population at all. Okay. Number nine, failure of a major financial mechanism or institution. Now, this is what's been going on through the G20 meetings. And what they've been doing is creating the idea that this crisis was actually caused by the fact that we don't have an international type of banking system and our governance, a global government. Financial mechanism to ward off of these fluctuations. And so what has happened is that some of the new banking law and rules and regulations are very stringent. And what they are going to do is imposing a greater liquidity on the banks. And having to attain a greater liquidity means that the biggest banks in the world are going to start slowly squeezing out the weaker, smaller banks, and that means that these small little banks here on the corner that are still operative in this country may soon, in the next few years, be gone because of liquidity or something, some technicality where a small bank doesn't attain a certain liquidity. We've gone a number of years ago, we had 17,000 banks. For now, we're down to about 6,800 banks in this country. We had a tremendous fall off in the number of banks nationwide in the United States. So you can see the consolidation is continuing. And through these imposed rules that have been promulgated and accepted and put out there because of this great crisis, economic crisis that supposedly they came up with, but the banks were overextended through financial futures trading and derivative trading. So what they're doing is they're taking that and imposing new rules and regulations and making the banks attain a greater solvency or a greater liquidity, I should say, and that's pushing out the smaller banks that have trouble maintaining that. Number 10, profound political and social instability. Well, what we're seeing here is the long-term trend has been that the country at the turn of the century was much more conservative, much more God-fearing, much more God-centered than it is today. Then over a number of decades, over 100 years and 113 years since 1900, we've had tremendous impacts and attacks on this country by its enemies, you could say, or the enemies of goodness, you could say. A political person might construe that to be a satanic attack, you know, a secular person might interpret it to be as big money attacking and things like this. But there was a change there that occurred in money becoming paramount. And so what has happened is that money has become the most important thing for everyone to worship. So that's basically, in a nutshell, what has occurred is that we have created a tremendous worship of wealth, of mammon, versus God. And it's not to be lightly taken, because in that worship of man and wealth and so forth, then the people that sit at the top, at the apex of this of the hierarchy of this money system, then are the new rulers. This has been set out over the ages through written in many books and so forth. So this is not absolutely new. But what we need to be aware of is that today it has a greater dominance than it ever has before, okay? And the dominance has arisen because of man's fall away from God-centered views into a much more secular society, where the money itself became all paramount for everyone to attain. The avarice, the greed, the hunger to succeed and become a multimillionaire, a multibillionaire, it has become like a hunger and a thirst has been created for these types of money intensified dynamics, you could say. So that's basically the 10 global risk, and I'll go back and just read those off real quickly. Global risk number 1, physical crisis in key economies. We've seen Egypt. We've seen these other. Turkey has some uprising going on. We've seen the attack on Syria, Libya fail. We've seen Greece. We've seen the European zone countries have severe economic crises and high unemployment. Spain, in particular, is one. Number 2, structurally high unemployment and underemployment. That's because we're seeing a financial crisis versus an economic crisis. Number 3, water crises throughout the world. We do have a larger population, and so we have a problem there in certain countries. Okay, number 4, severe income disparity. That's the big against the little. Number 5, failure of climate change mitigation adaptation. We're saying they're putting out the climate change is everything. Global warming is it. It's not in a cooling state, but it's debatable. Number 6, greater incidence of extreme weather events. We're seeing greater and greater storms and fires occur. Number 7, global governance failure. They want to bring about a one world government. The elite. Number 8, food crises. The GMOs supposedly are going to solve some of that, but they're actually set up to almost destroy the population instead of feeding them. Number 9, failure of a major financial mechanism and institution. They want to set up a one world bank. And number 10, profound political and social instability. So that pretty well rounds out the top 10 risk as set out by the World Economic Forum. And it's interesting, I have tried to get over there several times, but to no avail. But I'm talking to those people through email and so forth, and we're going to try to get a report before our next 22nd there, when they begin the Davos meeting, and try to get some direct interviews from some of those people. You need to go in there, okay? And to their site, okay, and then go ahead. You can watch some of their events and some of their interviews and some of their panel discussions live. Of course, it's about 7 hours, you know, ahead of us time-wise, clockwise. So you'll have to start looking at it early in the morning, and I watch it early in the morning live in many cases, and they'll play it back too. One sociologist created a word called Davos Man. It was referring to the global elite of wealthy men whose members view themselves as completely international. It is similar to the term Masters of the Universe attributed to influential financiers on Wall Street. The Davos men supposedly see their identity as a member as a matter of personal choice, not an accident of birth, according to political scientist Samuel M. Huntington, who is credited with inventing the phrase Davos man. The Davos men are people who have little need for national loyalty, view national boundaries as obstacles that thankfully are vanishing, and see national governments, as residues from the past, whose only useful function is to facilitate the elite's global operations. In his 2004 article, Dead Souls, The Denationalization of the American Elite, he argues that this international perspective is a minority elite's position, not shared by the nationalist majority of the people. So that's something to consider when you're looking at Davos and the so-called Davos man, see. And that's what you're going to find over there in Davos, these kind of people that are the world's elite. And you got Bill Gates, all those people over there, you know, doing their thing. And so that, in a nutshell, is my report on Davos Man. Oh, I know what. We have 10 more things to cover about Davos that I just remembered. And I want to go through these pretty quickly and give you some information here that it can be very, very useful before you begin to watch that, beginning the 22nd. I believe it's a Thursday. Let me check this out here a second. Yeah, next Wednesday, excuse me. It's the 22nd through the 25th of January. And, so next Wednesday is when it begins. So go in there to World Economic Forum and check that out. The top 10 trends Davos is setting out, or the World Economic Forum is setting out, are these in a nutshell. Number one, rising societal tensions in the Middle East and North Africa, widening income disparities, persistent structural unemployment, intensifying cyber threats. This list is a little bit different than the risk list. Number five, inaction on climate change. Number six, the diminishing confidence in economic policies. Number seven, a lack of values and leadership. The expanding middle class in Asia, the growing importance of megacities. Now, a megacity is usually defined as a metropolitan area with a total population in excess of 10 million people. So that's basically what they're saying here when they're talking about. And then number 10, the rapid spread of misinformation online. Now, this last one sort of combines with what has been uncovered with NSA. And let me make a point here a second. Let's get back to, the rapid spread of misinformation online. Well, the NSA is taking and recording and storing millions, if not into the billions eventually, of text messages and all kinds of different communications between people. Now, the idea, the reason why they're doing this to start with was that 9/11 was a legitimate attack against this country, and I don't accept that, period. And but many people do, and the majority of people in the United States, they're into the wrong things. They're into addictive processes and addictive processes and addictions. So the American public have become like dupes, okay? And in this dupeville that they have become seduced into, they're unaware of the way that they are. They're so caught up in primetime television or the Duck Dynasty, and I know a lot of the people like that and so forth. But if you become addicted to it where you have to see it all the time, and there's not any other alternative thing to view. I mean, PBS does have some, some programs. Now I saw something the other day. I just wanted to make a note of this before we move on to some of these other top 10 trends of 2014 is set out by the World Economic Forum here, is that there was a PBS special this week on 1964. And they sort of picked up at the end of the, at the beginning there of the JFK assassination, and then they started taking that all throughout 1964, which, and then they had LBJ being sworn in on the plane, and Lady Bird there, and Ms. Kennedy there, and all that. And then they started really explaining what 1964 was about. And, of course, they had in there the Gulf of Tonkin attack that supposedly was an attack on our ships there in the Gulf of Tonkin, which caused LBJ to issue an attack order and all this. Well, the problem with this is that it's proven now, and it's widely accepted, that the Gulf of Tonkin attack was not an attack, but it was a false flag operation and reported as an actual attack, but it never did occur. And then LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, could use that as a pretense to go against North Vietnam. This is widely accepted today, and it is widely known by scholars and intellectuals. So, but this particular special on PBS, I've forgotten the name of it, the title of it, but it was about 1964. It kept getting back to that Tonkin Gulf thing, and that's why it'll be. But the problem is, that was a lie. See, the Tonkin attack was a lie. But this particular special on a PBS station did never uncover the fact that it was a lie, that it didn't happen, and reported it as an actual historical fact. This is the problem in America. We've got these big institutions, whether it's PBS or whatever, just reporting a bunch of crap, you know, and it's not even actual truth, you know. And these little mistruths, they're taken in by our young people, and they think it's just a matter of fact that it is the truth, but it's not. So that's just one little point I wanted to make before we move on to this. But that number 10, the rapid rise of misinformation online, well, the misinformation is not only online. In fact, the problem that we have today is that this Davos is putting out this as number 10, one of the trends. The problem is that they want to squash the online, the news online, because you're going to get more truth today from the alternative press, which is publishing primarily on the web, on the internet. The alternative press is more truth-filled than your mainline press. So in here, they ought to have number one is establishment of truth by the alternative press is heralded, and the mainline press needs to get back in line to the truth. That's what they ought to put in there, but they're not going to say that. The people that convene at Davos and all, they're the richest in the world. They're the dominant corporate structures, the dominant financial structures in the world. So you're not going to see them say, tell us the truth about this thing. The societal tensions that they have here in the Middle East is number one. The American CIA and the British and the French and and Qatar and the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia, they're all funding those groups. Many of those groups are in Syria to take out Assad. So we're talking about rising societal tensions. Well, hell, we're the reason why they're rising, you know. It's our intelligence, our CIAs, and all this under all this dark, you know, darkness that's being promulgated against these Arab countries. Yeah, there's a lot of lot going on there, right? Okay, number two, widening income disparities. This was one of the 10 risks in the world, and we see that happening every day. The big corporations, the big financials, and the little little worker bee, you know. Number three, persistent structural unemployment. Well, I believe because that banking sector failure and insolvency and illiquidity, that's what's really been holding us back from any expansion. But so that now the Fed is just putting out that money and through quantitative easing, and Yellen, our new Federal Reserve chairman, she's going to do the same thing as Bernanke did, just to continue to keep it funded. Okay, in action on climate change, what kind of action are we supposed to take? Right now we're in one of the deepest, coldest winters ever, and a boat down there of scientists in Antarctica got locked in, frozen in, and they were on a global warming, a global change type of a research vessel. Okay, the diminishing confidence in economic policies. Well, when you have people out here that are fighting like this Chris Christie guy up there, and he's supposed to be our leader, and then they're closing down, you know, bridges and things like that. And you see that the economic policies of Obamacare, for example, are costing people more money for health than before. So people are saying, what gives here, you know? Number seven, a lack of values and leadership you can call Chris Christie that again in his administration up there in New Jersey, but it's across the board. It's Obama's. It's all the politicians in the country that are not well trusted anymore. And Congress is at a very low ebb of approval by the public at large. They're not trustful anymore of Congress and politicians. You're seeing a move back. Gary Johnson is gaining support now. He's going to be the candidate of the Libertarian Party in 2016. So you're going to see a return to some third-party politics. You're going to see a falling away, especially from the Republican Party, to Gary Johnson and other alternative third-party or fourth-party candidates, because the mainline parties have been playing us for fools. The mainline, could say, power structures within the Democratic Party and the Republican Party have just been playing us for the biggest dupes and fools in the country. I mean, when you really break down the average American and look at us, and I'm including myself, especially in my younger years, I did my bad deed back when I was young, just like everybody, but what we have in this country is we've had a deterioration of our education, our family structure, our family systems, a falling away from God, a nurturing of into a darkness of addiction, and especially sexual addiction, alcohol addiction, drug addiction, hate addiction. Addiction, you could say, of each other. We've been broken up into more little parties and more little groups, little cultic groups that are fighting each other. And one is, calling the other out and questioning the other's, about their motives, see. So, and also, if somebody gets up and makes a statement, even if it's off color or it's not appropriate, then you'll see an onrush of destruction, headed towards that group or person. The Duck Dynasty was an example of that, but it didn't work. The Duck Dynasty had a population and a group of supporters out there that far outweighed the detractors and the critics of the Duck Dynasty family. So, there is some give and take still in the country, and they did beat back that liberal attack on Duck Dynasty and reinstated them into their program, and so that they could continue broadcasting. So that the lack of values and leadership, are you kidding me? At an all-time low. Number eight, the expanding middle class in Asia. There's a tremendous middle class being created within Asia. And it's getting bigger and bigger every year, and especially in China and so forth. And that's why you're going to see a tremendous change in the Pacific Basin. And so look for that. The rapid spread of misinformation online. Excuse me. Let's go back. Number eight, the expanding middle class in Asia, and then number nine, the growing importance of mega cities. Okay, and you've got the mega cities that are over 10 million or more in size. And then the rapid spread of misinformation online. And they're saying that a mega city is any city that exceeds 10 million in population. So that's why I'm very, very pessimistic about us coming out of this. I mean, can we take people that are addicted to football and so forth, you know, and turn them in to legitimate, political, responsible citizens? I mean, that take interest in politics and that are willing to get out there and vote and find out? Or are they just willing to, they know more about the football change out and who the new coaches are than they know about, you know, anything else. They are so, so, you know what I mean, delusional. That's it. I know. I bring it up. I've been harping on this for over 7 years about delusion. But it's true because we're not able to perceive reality in a correct way. We're caught up in all the mechanisms, addictive processes, addictive compulsive systems of failing to awaken from this delusion that I always talk about. And I talk about men being more responsible than women in that state, the ego, the male ego. You know, when you see this like I have, I see clearly now over the years, I see how clearly and how fallen and how such small little notions and small little phrases and ideas control people. You know, you'll make a point. Obama does something like, for example, right now, this NSA, you know, flap, more than a flap, debacle, slave system, spy system. It should be done away with. It. They're talking about fine-tuning it. Are you kidding me? Stop listening to domestic communications, period. Originally, the NSA was, their responsibility and their mission was foreign. Let's keep it foreign and keep it out of our bedrooms and out of our cell phones and out of our text messages. This is should be the debate. Now, Rand Paul has the guts enough to stand up and say almost that. I haven't read lately some of the details, but he's saying, hey, we don't want this, period, like that. And I must support that kind of view because it should not, they should not have the capability in this country to record and intercept those communications of law-abiding American citizens. We've got the FISA court they'll go into and get just rubber-stamped anything. There shouldn't be secret courts. The FISA court should be closed down. These are all things that were set up beginning in 1947 with the National Security Act. And beginning then, they were able to set up a system of security and intelligence, you know, establishments, you could say. The ASA, which was one of the agencies I worked with in the Army, worked for, was preceded the NSA by a couple of years. In 1945, we were set up. By 1947, the National Security Act had been established, and that's when they started creating a behind-the-scenes national security screen for their criminal operations, and that's basically what's been going on. There have been twofold efforts within the NSA and these other CIA. There have been legitimate security threats and risks that have been addressed. So I'm not saying that all of these, but built into there on a deep level, okay, have been very, very deep, covert operations that benefit the elite of this world, especially the European and American elitist. They were able to gain information on business and so forth that put their own corporations way ahead of the others. And so as a result, we see that today these capabilities of the NSA far exceed anything that you could imagine. Snowden's release of information is opening the eyes of the average American to the threat that this poses to a free, law-abiding American citizen. And it doesn't matter what you look like. It's posing a threat to all of us. So as a result, we've got to start standing up and saying no NSA in America, period. We can't just say fine tune this and then take the phone records and let the telephone company store them. Unless there is a legitimate operation on an investigation on someone with a high probability of doing wrong, and they can take it in and get a regular search warrant and start surveilling those people, but in a legal way, not inside these FISA courts. This thing is insidious. The 9/11 is the most insidious act ever promulgated and perpetuated against this United States. The men that are responsible for putting that together and taking down those buildings are the most treasonous people that we're ever going to find. But they are the top people that are in control of our government, so we can't ever get them out of there. It happened under George W. Bush. Cheney and all those people, they're responsible for it. Then Obama comes in and he doesn't do anything. He doesn't say, oh my gosh, this thing was wrong. I'm going to start an investigation on 9/11 and I'm going to get down to the truth of it. No, he is using it just like all of them are. And they're using it as a lever to continue to enslave the average American citizen into a system of rule under the false guise, the lie, the myth that the 9/11 was a legitimate attack on this country. When you see a greater information come out about the number of Saudi citizens that were involved in this, and then you also see the coordination between Saudi Arabia, Bandar, and those people, and our CIA and the State Department and all covert, you know, support for the rebels in Syria, you begin to see that the ties and the connections go back to the Saudis quite a few decades. So it appears now to me and others that studied this and have looked at it for decades, I've looked at this stuff for 30 years, is that the reason why was the Saudis were able to put forward certain very radical individuals that could be corralled together into a group, brought to this country, and then created a facade or something around them as that they were going to do some kind of exercise, or that they were being taken in to test our security capability and so forth, and then were either placed on the planes or their names were used on those manifests or whatever. But it looks like that they were organized from outside, maybe in the Hamburg area was Mohammed Atta, and those groups were brought in here to do this mission, but probably under false pretenses. The Oklahoma City area was the center for many of these terrorists, and they were seen there before, and there were individuals there at the University of Oklahoma that I believe that were deeply involved in these operations. So you've got to give up the golf, give up the football, get back, start reading some of this conspiratorial stuff, listen to Alex and myself and others, and let's try to save this country. We're far from being able to materially save the country now. We're just barely able to disseminate some of our information, like on this station now. And we've got to try to increase our production of programming and so forth. But I will say this, there are some fine groups out there now. I can't tell you right off the top of my head, but they're putting out Breitbart is putting out some information that other groups have not, and there are many publication groups that we didn't have before, and we're beginning to see even the New York Times article recently by David E. Sanger and Tom Shanker on the NSA devises radio pathway into computers. That's a big biggie right there, and that's coming from the New York Times. So we're seeing a tremendous upsurge, okay, in publications, and even the New York Times can come out with some devastatingly critical news stories about the capabilities of these gigantic intelligence alliances and operations and agencies. we've got to quit this. We've got to knock it off. We've got to say no, and not in America should the NSA be allowed to collect anything. If you're talking about foreign operations, the NSA, okay, that's what they originally set up for, to protect ourselves from these foreign enemies. They have set up this idea now that these enemies are all over America and we've got to be looking at every corner and everything else. Forget that. That's not right. That is what they've been conditioning. They have this LEO out there, Law Enforcement Online. They have meetings and conferences and symposiums, and they indoctrinate these well-intentioned police officers and the military. They have these kinds of conferences and symposiums in the military also. And they've got them believing that there's a bunch of terrorists running around out here, and they're beginning to convince them also that the worst people are these patriot groups. And then you've got the Southern Poverty Law Center that's out there and putting everybody that I hold dear on their list. There's all kinds of people on that list that are the most stand-up, honest, good people that I've ever seen in my life, you know. So the Southern Poverty Law Center is publishing a bunch of lies about, you know, who the enemy is and these hate groups. And then the people read that, and you got the liberals in there that are easily manipulated against a conservative faction out there. Very, very, very diabolically manufacturing dissent within and hatred within the Democrats for these really they're saying these guys that the Patriots and the Tea Party group are a bunch of nutcases and they're fanatics, and oh, they shouldn't care about the Constitution that much. They're fanatics about it, you know, that we're the ones, these administrations up here in Washington, we're the ones that care about you, and these constitutionalists and these Tea Party people and those Patriots, they're a bunch of idiots. Well, the problem is that the Patriots and Tea Party people and people like myself are the sane people in this country. We're not into addictive processes and drug addiction and alcohol, and we don't worship every football or basketball game that's played out there either. Now get out of that. Get off of that stuff. Get back to saving this country. We're in dire straits here. We've got a diabolical group about to take the country down. And this is not fear-mongering. This is the truth. Go look. The whole policing out here is very aggressive now. The people are very brutish and very muscle-bound and so forth. They're not like the police that we used to have here in Austin that were friendly and very helpful. And they were peace officers first and police work second. It's just frustrating, but my listening audience, they know far more than I could have ever imagined them to know, and so they're coming along, and I know I sound like a fear-mongering idiot sometimes, but I'm not, and I've looked at this for over 30 years now, and my heart is with the American public, and I feel for the American public in this country, and I'm a real patriot. I'm not one of these that goes out here and talks, you know, behind people's back and stabs them in the back and pulls con games, you know. We've got people all out here that are running con artists and asking for money, and you shouldn't give them a penny. But they're out there, and they're claiming that they're miracles and that they're ordained by God, and they got out of dire straits and emergency situations, and God foresaw that, you know. And there's people, I see them at meetings, they'll stand up and they'll say, well, it was a miracle that you came out and you got out of there, wasn't it? And then the speaker will say, yes, it was a miracle. And I'm not saying who that was, but you've got all kinds of cons running loose out there asking for money based on so-called miracles and everything. Don't believe it, you know. We've got about 4.5-5 minutes left, so gonna end up with a little bit of the news here and see what we can do there, and then we're gonna bring I know what. Nigel Farage made a scathing attack in Europe. Okay, he booms. Europe is now run. Here's what he says in the European Union. Okay, with Greek Prime Minister Antonis Samaras sitting settling into his role as EU president, UKIP's Nigel Farage stunned the Goldman Sachs puppet with a 150-second tirade of truthfulness he has likely never experienced. Farage sarcastically remarks how Greeks will be dancing in the streets at Samaras's successful negotiation on MIFID, reminding him that 60% of youth are unemployed in Greece, and the neo-Nazi party are on the march. Europe is now run by big business. This is what Nigel Farage said at EU. Europe is now run by big business, big banks, and big bureaucrats. Farage went on and said that people do not want a United States. Farage goes on and suggested the swarmy-looking Samaras should rename his party from the New Democracy, its name, to No Democracy. People do not want a United States of Europe, the outspoken United Kingdom IP leader explains. They want a Europe of sovereign states. And he concluded ominously, the European elections will be a watershed. So hopefully the Europeans will return many of their political systems back to a much more democratic view and away from this big, big European consolidation, which Nigel Farage is against. So that was quite a speech to the European group over there. I mean, I can't believe sometimes that these people have guts. They'll just get up and they'll say, you know, what's on their mind, you know. And then, of course, Obama said earlier in the week, a day or two ago, he said, I've got the pen and I've got a phone, you know. I guess it's Obama phone, right? And so he can go with a pen and do executive orders, and he's got a phone, so he got a bully puppet with a telephone, I guess is what he was saying. So he can push people around and make them succumb to some kind of a fallen state of this and that and take everything. People have their hands out. Americans think government owes them something, everybody. You know, what kind of government program can I get on? The food stamps, the unemployment, this and that. But I will say this for the average working people. It's not their fault that the economy is in doldrums and straits. They took our industrial base offshore years ago over the last 30, 40 years. They took our manufacturing might away to the Pacific Basin. That's why we don't have any jobs. So it's the big corporate move away from America for cheap labor. And that's why we don't have jobs. Now, go over there and tell the World Economic Forum that, yeah, that the corporations that are meeting here, they took our jobs out to the Pacific Basin, Mr. Schwab. And we don't like it, and that's why we don't have any jobs in America anymore. So what are we going to do here, Mr. Schwab? Can you give us a loan? Can you spare a dime, Mr. Schwab? Our giant corporation took our jobs away from us. So how are you going to create them? We need to reindustrialize America. We need to get back to innovations and entrepreneurship here in the United States. That is the way out of our dire straits, our economic straits. We must just start making things and buying things that are made here and not overseas and not in China for sure. That darn sure. But anyway, we're getting to the end of our program. We want to thank you for listening. We've got Greg Palace coming up, beginning of the second hour, and then we'll go some news. He's only going to have about 20, 30 minutes with us, and then we'll conclude with some other items of interest at that time. But we want to thank you again for being with us this evening and listening and being very loyal listeners out there. We love each and every one of you, and we value each and every American, and we believe that our listeners have their heart in the right place, and we certainly thank you for being with us this evening. So good night and good luck with everything else out there. So good night, and tune back in next Saturday night, 7 to 9 in Austin, Texas. Thank you. Good night.